to call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order and let the record reflect the time is 3:16 and the date is March 3rd, 2003. Members present are Representative Roper, Gatto, Vice Chairman Lynn, and myself, Representative Anderson. Oh, and Representative Guttenberg is here. Today schedules House Bill 51, Representative Seaton's bill, labeling and prescription drugs, and then House Bill 94, which is from the House Transportation Committee, overtime pay for airline employees. And we intend to hold that one over by request of the sponsor. And we do have to adjourn at 4, so we'll try to go through this smoothly, I hope. HB 51 is the first one up, so Representative Seaton, welcome. Chris Knight, welcome. Loyal staff, friend of mine. Go ahead if you want to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee. HB 51, first of all, I'll try and make this real short because I know that you're pressed for time. HB 51 is a response for health and safety of persons in Alaska. What it does, it requires that prescription drugs that have the brand name on the label also incorporate the generic name somewhere near that label. And the reason for this is that you can get generic drugs and you can get brand drugs, and this happens quite often where people will get one filled at a drugstore and send off through the internet or mail order or whatever for cheaper drugs. They'll end up with two bottles. There's no way to tell that those two bottles contain the same medicine. And so what this does is allows the consumer to know that they have the same drug. And this, when we first drafted this bill, there was some question of whether all brand names of that same material should go on there. And that was not the intention, to have one company advertise for another. It is just so that on each pill bottle that you have, you will have the generic name, so you can tell that it has the same drug. We've gone through and in here, let me back up a little bit. The senior citizen centers in almost every place in my district, this was one of the problems they identified, is people overdosing, double dosing. In fact, you have a letter in here from Mr. Lau, director of the senior citizen center in Homer, who actually had found that he had double dosed his own mother, couldn't figure out why she was being spacey. What people do is they organize their pills in these containers for the day or for the week. And it wouldn't be a problem except that most people now are taking 6 or 8 or 10 pills, especially the elderly, when they're treating a number of conditions. And so it's hard to keep all these straight. So all this is consumer protection to allow the consumer to know that the bottles contain the same things. You have in here number of letters of support. You also have things such as the memorandum from legislative research showing that 15% of medication errors are due to confusion over drug names, and one of the FDA's 15 suggestions for eliminating drug overdoses is number 15, provide brand and generic name on all medication labels. I could go through a number of these others if you want to, Mr. Chairman, but this bill had a fairly extensive hearing in Hess, and we did make one change. That was a committee substitute that instead of requiring the name to be below the brand name in parentheses, we allowed it to be somewhere near the brand name, because some people have computer programs right now that put it below or above, and not to require that change.
Okay.
And you do also have some examples of labels in the back there that show both brand, a single name, and the brand name with the generic name, as are currently done by a number of pharmacies.
Well, Representative Seaton, I really appreciated your packet. I was looking through that earlier, and it was really thorough, and that's like kind of like Representative Roper's packets. It's appreciated. I also recognize for the record that Representative Dahlstrom has joined us, and I would also state for the record that myself, Representative Crawford, Dahlstrom, Gatto, and Lynn are all co-sponsors to this bill, so hopefully you come here with warm reception. But why don't we, with your completion of your opening there, why don't we open up to questions to the sponsor, and then next I'm going to ask a question. Is there anyone in the audience, because I don't have anyone in teleconference, that wants to testify? Okay, so, hold on, Carol. So that looks like we don't have anyone to testify, so we'll go to questions from the committee. Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am a co-sponsor, so you know I'm definitely behind this, but I do have this question about the definition of the word generic. And my concern is this, and I don't know of a case, but this is a concern that I think is important to be addressed. If I have a drug that's not generic, but name brand, drug A, and there's a company that decides to make a generic equivalent, we'll call it drug B, and another company that makes equivalent, call it drug C, and you can see where I'm going now, and suppose there's D, E, and F, and G, do we have to then say the generic equivalent of drug A is, and list B, C, D, E, F, G, or am I outside of what the definitions are here? That's what I'm trying to arrive at here.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yes, this is what we went, Representative Gatto, we went through this with the alleged legal, and I did not want to clutter up the name. And so what this requires is on any brand name prescription that you include the generic. So each one of those brand name prescriptions would only have the generic name on that pill bottle. It wouldn't have all the additional brand names for that same thing. So this doesn't mean that all names will be there. It is just that everyone that is, if you get a generic, it'll have the generic name. If you get any brand name, it will also include the generic name, but not all the other brand names.
Next follow-up, Representative.
I just wanted to be sure about the definitions so that when this bill is gone from here and I no longer have access to the questions, that we understand what the term generic name is. And it may be something everybody knows but me, but I don't know it. And here's why I'm asking it. I'm going to give you an example. We all buy Benadryl by the bucket sometimes. And the official name of Benadryl is certainly not Benadryl. In fact, it's diphenhydramine. Now, whenever I see a bottle of diphenhydramine, I don't care. I know that it's the equivalent of Benadryl. If that's what we mean by the term generic name, then I'm okay. If we don't mean that, then I wanted to know what we did mean by the word generic. Because that's a scientific name. And I don't know why the word generic. I'm confused by the word generic, even though I've used it many times.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, yes, we had the same question, and we went to Ledge Legal, and we asked them about the term generic. It is the drug name, and we asked if we needed to define that in this section, and they told us no, that it is defined within this section in numerous places, and it's in common enough usage. So we asked that question to make sure that it wasn't a confusing factor for the pharmacies.
Representative Roper?
Yeah, on that point, Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, would it be my understanding then that there's only one generic name? Because as Representative Gatto points out, there's a concern about some confusion if there's a difference in, is the FDA, when they approve a drug for use, do they stipulate that there is one specific generic name for it?
Through the chair, Representative Roquist, yes, there's a generic name, which is the name of the drug. And then there may be many brand names, you know, once things are out of patent, that could be applied to that. But there's one drug name, yes.
To follow up on that, I know that one method that the drug companies keep for keeping their drugs on patent is to make certain small tweaks in their formulas to change them. So do you know whether or not there'd be a change in the generic name if there was a modification in the formulation of the drug?
Through the chair, Representative Roker, I believe that whether you're changing the color, the shape, or many of those other things that they change, as long as it's that same drug, then that's a drug name. Now, if you have a different patented drug that is outside and for a certain length of time, you cannot make a generic name. You cannot market that. It's only the drug, only that brand name can be used for that drug until there's a generic available.
Well, to follow up on that, I guess that's the concern I have right now, is that because then many drug companies actually will add additional product or some other compound to their drug sometimes to tweak it up. All these drug companies are trying to stay on patent to avoid the generic sales. So they mess with these formulas all the time. I guess that's a concern I have about what they might do. Have you had any testimony or research any of that type of thing? That
we haven't had any on that, and especially since if it's strictly a patented, still a patented drug, and there can't be a generic, then you can't have two bottles that are under the same prescription that have different names on them. A doctor could prescribe one or could prescribe another, but you wouldn't have one prescription that could be filled two ways. It's only when you have a generic of that drug that's available that it can be filled two ways. If it is a drug that is not the same as a generic, then you can't take that prescription and fill it with a different drug, because that is the whole idea of the generic, is it's supposed to be the equivalent drug. So if this is not an equivalent drug, then we don't have to worry about a bottle having the same medication being filled on that same prescription and having two different labels on the same bottle.
Have you talked to any drug companies or the pharma lobby about this? This would cause any problems? Or?
Yes, we have. We've talked to pharma, and pharma did not oppose it. We talked to drug companies. We talked to Medco, which is one of the large health HBO kind of things that have legislative affairs people, and they contacted us and went through, and they had no objection to this as well. And we have a letter in here from Aetna, which is they have no objection as well. In fact, they support the bill.
Okay, before Representative Roper goes, and then Representative Lynn, Representative Crawford joined us a while back, and also Representative Masick, I see you there. If you want to join us at the table, you're welcome to.
I just going to follow up and say, have you made any kind of request for opinion from our Board of Pharmacy in the state of Washington?
From our Board of Pharmacy, did we? Excuse me.
Did we request the Board of Pharmacy?
We didn't do a request through the Board of Pharmacy. They were...
Why don't you just say your name just for the record and who you're with?
For the record, I'm Chris Knight. I'm staff director of Paul Seaton. We did do some request. We did talk with the Board of Pharmacy about whether this could be accomplished through statute. There was some discretion about, or, you know, not discretion, but there was some concern whether they might be able to do it through regulation or we could do it through statute. They thought they might be able to do, they might have the statutory, you know, feasibility to do that. They were going to have a board meeting and decide. But in the process, we explained to them, well, we'd probably go forward with legislation and see if we could do it that way through statute. They didn't have any problems with the bill. They supported the concept. They were just, you know, concerns whether they or not had the statutory authority. So.
Well, just one final question, Mr. Chairman. I just have you had testimony in the previous committee about the size of the label and fitting all the stuff on the label? Sometimes I know she has some labels in the packet, but those look a lot cleaner than the ones ever I get when I get any medications. Doesn't seem like there's going to be any room left down there.
Representative Seaton.
Through the chair, yes, Representative Roberg, that's why we did not go with the way Legislative Legal originally wrote this bill, which would have required all the brand names and the generic on there, because it would be confusing on the label. This is simply is one line, one word right next to or near to the brand name. And we have some, like I say, this was Family Pharmacy in, I think, Eagle River, Chugiak, sent this. Copies of these labels to it. That's the way their computer program prints them out. They didn't have a problem with this.
Representative Lynn, thanks for waiting.
Oh, yeah. This bill does have my support. I'm proud to be one of the co-sponsors. I just wanted to point out that all the flowers and plants have a generic name, if you will. I believe it's in Latin. But many different localities, you know, have many different common names for these flowers, and it's the same thing basically. So if you go to a scientist, you call this thing by with its Latin name, so they can talk to each other. On brand name drugs, you can usually look in the very fine print on the back and find the active ingredient with the with a generic name on it. But this is a needed bill because it goes both ways, both on the brand name and I get, this doesn't apply to generic drug. If I get a generic drug downtown, it doesn't give the common name, does it, or the brand name?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Lynn, that's correct. It will not. All this will do then is have the generic. But if you get a brand, it will not only have the brand name, but it will also include the generic.
So that
if you have two bottles,
right.
No matter what, you'll have both the generic. And if you have two different brand names, they're also going to have, each one will have the generic on there, so you can cross-reference and see that it's the same drug through the generic. And often you'll have the medicine, the generic name, will be on the sheet, the data sheet,
right,
in the bottle, and it won't occur on the label. So,
right. If I may follow up, obviously this won't fix everything. It'll be people who don't read any labels of any kind, but it's going to be an excellent step in the right direction to at least make it better than it is now.
Representative Rookberg.
Hey, Mr. Chairman. Hey, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lynn. Excuse me, Representative Seaton.
The other beard.
Question, does the FDA assign a generic name when they approve a drug for distribution to the public and still being on patent? Do you know that?
Can I?
Go ahead,
Mr. Knight. Chris Knight. Yes, they do. As soon as a patent is approved and the FDA goes forward, a generic name is automatically assigned to every brand name, whether that patent has ran out or not. So, for example, in a case of, I hate to use a different drug. Well, Viagra, that's the only one that comes to mind. I was reading something about it today. Use that drug.
Lindenfell.
For example, the patent. I guess the patent's getting ready to run out here shortly. Originally, when that drug was originally put together by the FDA, they assigned a generic equivalent to that drug. When that patent runs out, then therefore the manufacturing of a generic equivalent can now go forward. So, I guess to answer your question.
Well, any follow up on the question of Viagra?
That leads me to the question. I was kind of thought that might be the case, but I wasn't sure. I appreciate Mr. Knight's answer, but I guess what troubles me then is if we have a script that has the medication, it has a brand name and then a generic name. And there's no generic drug available. Now, does that cause a problem, number one? Number two, is it raise an expectation, or three, create confusion on the part of the public by saying, well, there's a generic name here, there must be a generic drug, but it's not off patent yet, so there is no generic drug available in the marketplace. So I got a problem here, maybe, because of that.
Through the chair, Representative Rookberg. The generic name is on there, is the name of the medicine that's in there. If it's not available as a generic to purchase, it's still the name of the medicine. And so what you have is the name of the generic is the name of the medicine. The brand name is somebody's marketing name for that medicine. And so having the name of the medicine on the bottle, if it's not available, every pharmacist will know that it's not available. They do not have it as a generic.
This bill isn't for pharmacists, it's for the public.
This is for the pharmacist through the chair. This is for the pharmacist to label drugs so that people can have bottles and can tell that they're the same medicine so that we don't cause overdoses. So if you have one person that has a generic, if it's available, and somebody else that has one of the brand names for it, they know that when they're filling their pill bottles, they're not supposed to take two of these a day and put two of these a day, even though both of them have a prescription from Dr. Jones and says take two a day. At least they have a way of knowing that those two medicines are the same thing, instead of having this one have a name on it and this one have a totally different name in which you cannot even tell that they're the same.
Mr. Chairman, I guess what I was getting at, the scenario I was talking about, is there's a patented drug that would only have one brand name, and they would have a generic name, as the testimony is from the FDA, but there would be no generic drug available. So are you raising expectations on the part of the public that they can, or confusion, that they could get a generic drug that would be cheaper, when in fact they can't?
Mr. Knight?
Chair, Representative Rookberg. in my discussions with the pharmacists, and one of the pharmacists I spoke with was the one recommended by Representative Dahlstrom, who gave us the pharmacist's phone number and stuff, and we got the labels, which are in your packets. For example, that pharmacy already puts a generic and a brand name drug on their pill bottles. And they do it because they can, and they think it's better information. In that direct question, which you just asked, is it going to create some sort of unheralded expectation for consumers who are going to be requesting a generic equivalent, even though it doesn't exist? The pharmacist I spoke to said it'd be great if more people came in and asked questions about the drugs that they were getting prescribed. So, I mean, the few questions they may get asking, is there a generic equivalent? And the pharmacist can say, well, no, there actually isn't. This is the only drug available. They thought that would be appreciated just because it'd keep people's interest in the drugs, I mean, themselves, and keep them more aware and more knowledgeable about all the different drugs they're taking. And they thought it was not going to be too much of a problem or a burden.
Hey, Representative Gatto, then Lynn.
Let me ask you this question. Familiar with Bayer aspirin? And which is the generic equivalent in the words Bayer aspirin?
Through the chair, acetylsalicylic acid is the.
That's what I'm trying to get to.
Is the equivalent, and this doesn't cover over-the-counter drugs. This is for powerful medications that are prescriptions that are given by pharmacists to people, so that they can tell. So that the consumer can tell what drugs he's supposed to be taking. This is simply to prevent that. If you, like I say, if you look and you find it, if you go to the documentation is up to 59% of drugs are misused. And a lot of that, 15% of all of the medication errors are due to labeling. And this can solve that. The FDA, they list this as one of the 15 recommendations they have nationwide for solving the problems of drug overdoses in the medical industry. And that's all I can say. We can leave the problem or we can try and solve it for the health and safety of Alaskans and give them the information.
Quick one, Representative Gatto, then Representative Guttenberg.
I don't mean to say the bill isn't valuable. What I mean to do is to simply bring up questions which might be brought up by the next committee or on the floor or later on by an individual by asking a question for which there is a perfectly reasonable answer that is now on the record. And when I asked the question about Bayer aspirin, it was, many people have heard this term and they know they can buy St. Joseph's aspirin or anybody's aspirin. The question is, what part of that is the generic name? You said it's acetylsalicylic acid. So is Bayer the brand? Is aspirin something else, acetylsalicylic acid, than the scientific name or the generic name? I guess that's what I'm asking. Which one is which? I know I would say acetylsalicylic acid is the generic name. So Bayer aspirin, both of those have to be together to become the brand name, or is only one of them the brand name, or can somebody do something with those two names that we're familiar with?
Representative Gatto, let me clarify. I think that you're comparing apples to oranges, though, and I think what Representative Seaton is saying is we're looking at the drugs that are sold over the counter, that need a pharmacist,
okay,
doctor's
you want
prescription.
An example of
that one,
then?
Sure.
I'll say there's a drug called Lamisil. It's called a fungicide. It's terbinafine. Terbinafine, I believe, would be the scientific name. That would be the generic name. But is antifungal the proper term, or is Lamisil? And I'm just trying to make it on the record, which one of those is the brand name, and do you need both of those to be the brand name, or only one, or neither?
Representative Seaton.
Right. What this bill addresses is that whatever you have for your brand name, a fungicide is a type of medicine. Okay, and Lamisil is a brand name, and terbinafine, if I got the right, would be the generic name of the drug, if this was a prescription drug. Okay, and you could have lots of different names for brand names for that. But each bottle would have to have terbinafine on it. Each ointment would have to have terbinafine on it, and you would know those were the same. This really isn't nearly as much of a problem in over-the-counter stuff. I mean, I won't say it's not as much of a problem, but we're dealing here with those prescriptions that are made out by the pharmacist. He types them out, he puts them in the computer. Those are the labels that are put on at the
And I understand your concern, Representative Gatto. We'll get to Guttenberg, then Representative Wilford. But I think those examples, wouldn't you think, are fewer, or would you say they're greater, the example you just gave? I mean, I'm sure you could quiz him on a few where there's several terms, and maybe this doesn't cover that. But in general, you know, I look at Rogaine, that's minoxidil. I look at, you mentioned that, you know, Viagra. I mean, any of these have one chemical term. So I'm sure you can pick a couple examples that might stump him. But in general, I think the bill...
Well, the concern was, as the patents expire, the name Rogaine, then is we get another name in there now, but both of them will become minoxidil. So that's a case where there's only a single name for them. Rogaine, sorry.
Yeah.
Whoever the manufacturer is, I guess. I don't know. But I'm okay with it. I just wanted to see if indeed that we could get some clarity by having some discussion, and I'm okay with it.
Okay. Representative Guttenberg?
Was Representative Lynn?
I passed, basically. Well, the point, when I get a prescription and I go to the pharmacist, sometimes they will say, do you want this, or would the generic be okay? And it's the same, I'll take the cheaper one, which is generic.
Representative Guttenberg?
Mr. Chair, well, that was kind of my question. But along the same lines, are pharmacists required to give you or to tell you that there's a generic product? I mean, if your doctor prescribes a brand name that's very expensive and you go to the pharmacist and he says there's a generic product that's the exact same thing, is he required in some ways to do that, to tell you that? And if he's not, is this a way that the patient, next time he's getting a refill, can ask for the generic drug? Possibly reduce costs considerably.
Through the chair, I'm not sure if the pharmacists are required to tell you, you know, in this state. In some states, I believe they are required to ask you. I'm not sure if they are here or not. Again, what this is a consumer protection so that you don't overdose, or senior citizens or whoever doesn't overdose by not being able to tell that they have two bottles of the same medicine in front of them. People can investigate their drugs and find out. And the drug manufacturers had no problems with this going on there. I mean, they're not objecting to it anyway.
So. Well, I've learned, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've learned something very helpful here. A drug that I take is you have a sheet on it, and there's something in there that I didn't know about it. So, and I'll be signing on to
this. Question from Representative Roper.
Well, I think the point that Representative Gatto made is good to have on the record, because many people would think of aspirin as a generic name by the use of Webster's Dictionary, but I think there's enough currency here that generic drug means something different than just generic in terms of a term. But then, let's see, I have one more there. That's about it, Mr. Chairman. There's something, but it slips my mind. Right.
Okay. I'll give you Representative Seaton's room number and Chris's phone number, and you can ask.
You can Ginkgo biloba.
Is that the brand name or the
memory? Okay. Hearing, seeing no other questions and no testimony, can I get a motion from
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Lynn.
I move CSHB 51 HESS. With attached fiscal note and individual recommendation.
That's a zero fiscal note.
Zero.
Do I hear any objection? Hearing none, so moved. And please sign the file. So we have a few minutes left. We'd love to have the sponsor come up for HB 94 now, Representative Masick. And it looks like we do have, once you testify, someone from ERA Aviation that would like to testify, and we have the Department of Labor if there are any questions. Welcome.
Thank you, Co-Chairman and members of Labor and Commerce. Thank you for hearing this bill today. House Bill 94 was introduced to bring certainty to the interpretation of existing federal and state wage and our statutes as they pertain to payment of overtime in the air transportation industry. Because of the uniqueness of their working conditions, flight crews have been considered professionals that are exempt from the standard 8-hour workday, 40-hour week, and associated overtime pay requirements. And in conjunction with the maximum flight hour requirements set by FAA, these exemptions at both state and federal level have allowed the industry to structure wage and hour schedules best suited to the work requirements of their flight crew personnel. Some court decisions have raised a question about the correct interpretation of state wage and hour laws and the application of overtime exemptions for flight crews. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 94 is intended as a creative measure that will clarify the Alaska Wage and Hour Act and ensure that Alaska law is consistently applied to the flight crew members of air carriers who are governed by the Railroad Labor Act. The bill cites the provisions of the Federal Railway Labor Act that governs air carriers in order to provide consistency between federal and state application of the exemptions. And Mr. Chairman, I have included in the packet for members to see on the background of the Railroad Labor Act, and we've also included a portion on the lawsuit that was pending with ERA. And Mr. Chairman, if you have any questions or members of your committee, I'm here with my staff. Chief of Staff Eric Musser is here to answer any questions if you have any.
Well, we appreciate your introduction. I think what we'll do first is, just out of courtesy, a few times we've been caught where the people couldn't testify. Why don't we go to testimony first? And I just have one. All right, I guess I have two people. Are you online from ERA, Janie Bender and Nanny?
Yes,
we are. Hi, why don't you go ahead and state your name one more time, who you're with for the record, and then if you could keep your testimony to a couple minutes, that would be great, and we'll see if the committee has any questions for you.
Okay, thank you. My name is Jenny Lou Bender. I'm with ERA Aviation. I'm a flight attendant, and I'd like to let you know that it'd be to my benefit, especially to have this change so that I can enjoy some of our flight benefits. I have four adult children, three of those who live down the lower 48, and that would give me an opportunity to go down and visit them. And I have a husband that works in the bush that works 6 weeks on and 2 weeks off, and that would give me an opportunity to get the schedule where I could spend the time with him when he's at home. That's all I'd like to say today. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
I'm not sure I understood. How was she able to?
I don't understand at all.
Yeah, but the committee, I guess, is confused in the context of how this maybe applies to you, and you say it'll benefit you as a flight attendant.
What it amounts to is, if Eric can schedule more than 8 hours per day, then I can work longer days and have more time off during that month.
Okay.
Not without paying overtime.
Okay.
What about flight crew?
And who's the other individual there?
My name is Nani Kai. I'm also a flight attendant with ERA Aviation.
Go ahead, Nani.
And I'd like to also testify in support of this bill. What this would benefit for us is the flexibility in the schedule to build lines where we're utilizing our people more economically, also allowing them to work their schedules and have larger blocks of time off within a month period, to be doing their schedule or their allotted hours in a more condensed fashion, allowing blocks of time. But not everybody would necessarily need to do that. We have several people on staff who would like it. We would also have the flexibility of scheduling normal 8-hour days for those others to accommodate the entire line 24 hours a day.
Okay. We appreciate that. Representative Gatto?
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, please.
Tell me if I'm correct. What you would like to do is work 4 days at 10 hours a day rather than 5 days at 8 hours a day. Would that be reasonable as far as what you're trying to accomplish?
No, not really. Our work days because of the lines that we run and the charters and the different schedules that we fly to, it would allow us to work, have a duty period up to 12 or 14 hours a day, not necessarily being in the air with our passengers. FAA regulations require that we can only be in the air at 8 hours in a 24-hour period. But it would allow us to accommodate a longer day schedule, more condensed, possibly even up to 6 days in a row. And then I'd have to have a day off for FAA regulations, but then I could have maybe a week and a half off of actual time off to do my own personal travel using our benefits.
Representative Gatto, follow up.
And you're saying you're willing to give up the overtime pay just so you can have the flexibility to work longer hours in shorter periods of time?
There actually isn't any overtime pay. We would still be, we're right now based on a 8-hour day. We're guaranteed a salary based on flight hours per month. We instead of stretching our 60 hours a month that we fly now over 30 days, we can consolidate it into 15 or 18 days and have more time off. The pay itself in the airline industry, the travel time is more important. The personal time is much more important than the extra $2 for an hour or two a day.
Just for the record, too, I appreciate what the sponsor stated in her statement, which is this legislation simply puts in statute what is existing policy and exempts flight crews from overtime. So I don't think there's any motive to this other than to be in parity and have in statute what overtime regulations are to being abided by. And I wish they would have sent correspondence in, but I've spoken with folks like Barbara Huff at Teamsters, and at least last time we spoke, they didn't have a problem. Representative Crawford.
Why would they? Why would they care?
Well,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I understood you correctly, this would allow you to work at least 8 hours in a 14-hour period up to 6 days a week without a break. Would that also be for pilots as well? And could that become a safety issue? Is that one of the reasons that it isn't done that way now, or is it done that way now for the caller?
Actually, it's not duty time. It's actually the 8 hours is restricted to time in the air. Conceivably, under this new program, I could fly for an hour in the morning and have a four-hour break where I'm technically on call, but in, you know, doing my own thing, and then a return flight back from Kodiak 4 hours later, and do that two or three times in a day.
Are you a pilot?
I'm a flight attendant.
Okay. Would that be the same for pilots, if they could work any combination up to 14 hours, just so long as they're not in the air more than 8 hours for 6 days in a row?
Yes. FAA regulations require that we are not, in any 24-hour period, we are not allowed to fly or be in the air longer than 8 hours in a 24-hour period. And we must have 1 day and 7 off.
If we were to do this, would this mean that ERA could get along with less pilots than what they have presently?
No, it would benefit the pilots in the amount that they would be able to structure their schedules, allowing them more personal time in a row, as opposed to working 5 days on and 2 days off. They could possibly work 6 days on for 2.5 weeks and then have the rest of the month off. The other people would accommodate schedules by reverse scheduling to cover the entire line all month long.
So they don't do that now. They have to actually spread it out to where they work a total of 4 weeks, but only work 5 days a week?
Yeah, it's spread out over the month. It's not consistently 5 days on, 2 days off. Sometimes you'll have 6 days on, 3 days off. 5 days on, another day off. To cover the schedule, everybody's line is different, but it's spread out over the entire month, giving them little increments of time off here and there.
Thank you.
Any other questions? The committee?
Okay, looking at the time, go ahead, Representative Crawford.
Do they have any pilots that could speak to this?
I don't think we have any online, but I think because we're going to hold the bill and keep public testimony open, I think
we could. Well, this is great legislation. I'd be happy to motion it out. But if you want to hold it, Mr. Chairman, that's your prerogative.
Yeah, no, we need to hold it. So, if you don't have any more questions at this stage from the committee directly, then we will hold the bill, keep public testimony open, and having no other business before the committee right now, we will see you Wednesday. We'll adjourn the meeting at a little before 4:59.